Imagine this. You're walking around town on a Friday evening and you see somebody get physically assaulted. The cops come and you're a witness, so you stick around. You go down to the police station, you're asked to look at a photo lineup, and you pick the wrong person out of that lineup. This happens all the time, witnesses identifying the wrong suspect. That's according to Laura Zarosky. She's the policy director at the Innocence Project Northwest, based at the University of Washington in Seattle.
At the most basic level, there's nothing wrong with doing a lineup. The problem goes into how those lineups are constructed, the words that the officer might be using, and other sort of factors that have been identified in the last 30 or 40 years of research in this area to determine what is suggestive and what is actually objective.
Zarosky wants police departments all over the state to change their eyewitness identification procedures. She says the changes fall into four general categories.
The first is that the person administrating the lineup should not know who the suspect is. So this is called blind administration, sometimes called double blind, meaning that the witness and the person administering the lineup don't know who the suspect is. And there are a couple of reasons for this. One is maybe more obvious, that we don't want that person who knows who the suspect is to influence the witness in any way. Another improvement is the construction of the lineup. And that means when you're collecting the people to be put in the lineup, whether it be photo array or a live lineup, to be cognizant of the other people in the lineup so that the suspect's photo or the suspect themselves doesn't unduly stand out. And ideally, that the other fillers, that everyone in the lineup is put there based on the description that the witness gave of the perpetrator and not to the suspect.
Okay, that's core two.
Yes, that's core two. The third would be to instruct the witness in terms of before the lineup happens, it's very important to help the witness to understand a few things. The first thing is that the suspect or the perpetrator of the crime may or may not be there. This is there's sort of this common presumption from witnesses that a suspect is there and that they probably got the right person, right? And so it's important for the person administering the lineup to say the person may or may not be there. Secondly, it is just as important to clear an innocent person than it is to find the actual perpetrator. And third, the investigation is going to continue whether you, no matter what your choice is here. And so it kind of takes the pressure off that person to choose and also sort of puts it in their mind that may not otherwise be there, that maybe that person who did it isn't actually here.
Hmm. And a fourth?
The fourth is gathering a confidence statement after the officer has done the identification procedure. We know that there's a phenomenon, particularly in terms of weak memory IDs, where a person will become more and more confident. It's called confidence inflation, so that by the time the trial comes around, what may have been a sort of weak identification, they've now become 150% sure that this was the person who did it. And so getting that statement immediately after an identification is made is really critical.
What specifically motivated you and your colleagues to push for this change in procedure?
Well, it's probably the easiest policy decision that we could make, given that eyewitness identification is by far and away the leading cause of wrongful conviction. Just in the DNA cases nationally, 329 DNA cases, exonerations in our country nationally, a mistaken eyewitness identification was a contributing factor in 74% of those cases.
You have a specific example of that?
Oh, we do. Just here in our state, two of our clients, they were co-defendants, Larry Davis and Ellen Northrup, who were wrongly convicted in Vancouver in Clark County, Washington. That's close to the Oregon border. In 1993, they were wrongly convicted and both served 17 and a half years in prison before they were exonerated by DNA. And their case was practically a textbook example of what not to do when doing identification procedures. And this is really what we hope to accomplish in discussing these issues, is to help law enforcement to understand that eyewitness evidence is much more like trace evidence than they have ever treated it before. There's really one shot to accurately collect this evidence, and after that, it becomes affected and malleable.
You know, you gave that statistic, 74% of cases in which the person who was convicted was later exonerated, I think, based on DNA evidence.
Yes.
That's a huge percentage. So if eyewitness ID really is flawed, if it leads to these false convictions, why is the push to change this process only coming about now?
I think it's a difficult issue. Anytime a tradition that has been so widely used for so long is challenged, I think that that can be difficult. I do firmly believe, however, with that said, that this is just a matter of getting the right information to law enforcement. Every law enforcement officer I have worked with, particularly those in this working group, absolutely want the best evidence that they can get. And if these procedures can do much to improve the quality of the evidence that they're getting, then I think that they would be, most people would be on board with that.
Ultimately, what would the impact of a change in this procedure be on people who are accused of crimes?
For those cases where the identity of the perpetrator is not known, it will certainly have an impact in terms of protecting or at least increasing the likelihood that the wrong person will not be convicted.
Lara Zarowski is policy director of the Innocence Project Northwest. She's part of a group that's pushing for changes to how eyewitness identifications are conducted. That group includes officials from the Seattle Police Department and the King County Sheriff's Office.